Okay, so disclaimer.
There's going to be
some things coming out. I was on the Web Whiskey Whatnot podcast.
You were?
Adam Argyle. It's not out yet, so it's coming
out. They paired you two up?
That's fun.
Well, he's on. He's the new co-host. And so
Adam is on Web Whiskey Whatnot as the host. Yeah. So it's not Chuck anymore? Because Chuck went to France or something.
Chuck moved to like Italy or something like that. Out of time zone range, I think is the situation.
So it's Robbie and Adam.
Yeah, and so anyway, so they sent me a nice bottle of whiskey, but I may have said some things, Chris.
Yeah.
that are going to hurt my career. Anyway, I just want to preface this.
It's hurt coming your career.
Out. I maybe got a little spicy on the takes, but you know. You do it for the clips. You know what I mean? You do it for the clips. So
good. They take a while to edit, don't they? I don't know.
It's probably a 2-week thing or something. Okay. So
I can
repair my
your belongings.
Yeah.
Get a box for your ferns at the office.
It's a technology choice. I'm sure everyone knows exactly what I'm thinking out right now. So
yeah. It rhymes with pre-act.
Hey, speaking of websites, you're listening to the Shop Talk Show podcast about front end web development. I'm Dave Ruber with Chris Quare. Did you see? I do want to shout out to Storybook. Storybook is React and Emotion, I think. But anyway, they've been announcing, like, they've been working with that E18E, like the efficient engineering group or whatever. It's like a group of like JavaScript-y dudes who like try to make JavaScript projects better, you know, just through rigor, basically. But they've been working with them, I think. And like Storybook's gotten a lot better. Like they've reduced the number of dependencies, which a week like this, where NPM had a huge vulnerability, like that's amazing. And I just want to celebrate that. I think like, you know, it's hard to like to untangle the rat king of dependencies, but like, man, if you can do it, that's great.
We like ran the tool against our stuff and it was like, oh, we just somehow don't use any of those.
Wow.
So we just scooted it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause it was in Chalk was kind of the big one. Cinder Sorhus,
that's like making colors in the terminal, right?
Which is pretty standard for all these, you know, even the most basic CLI tool, you know, is going to do that. And then, strip ANSI, I think was one, you know, just like, or, you know, where it just like removes characters and stuff like that. So,
it's interesting. Big, the downstream stuff I thought was interesting too. It's like those are compromised, but if you're a big project and you have it in your crap, that means people installing your crap are getting it, right? So you have to responsibly disclose what you're doing about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to kind of be like, hey, there was a huge problem. And if you installed anything in this 2-hour window, your whole computer might be compromised because it had system level access, you know? So, yeah,
and like we didn't do that, but it did happen. So
we didn't not do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, right.
Yeah. There's a post. We dodged a bullet that I'm reading, and it's not a long post, but it takes me a long time to read. But just I think it's that sums up the whole like, man, we.
Anybody that's been screaming how insecure NPM is constantly put another validated.
Gold star on their hat, right? Yeah. Well, it's a catastrophe. It's literally an open security hole that this guy, I think, got fished, right? To like, hey, update your 2-factor NPM. Hey, we're expiring something, you know? And he's like, okay. And that one mistake, boom, all his like, his base level library that's in these other like 18 base level libraries got infected. And like, if you installed it, it like tried to steal your Bitcoin wallet. Thank God that's all it did. Right? Like it could have done so much more, so much worse, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it was a, you know, it was. I saw a
fun security one on Blue Sky the other day. It was one of those panic guys was posting a letter they got from their Portland area school thing, and they said, you know, there's a problem with accounts and you know, kids' account using the same password from account to account. So once they get one password, they can jump around and get some other stuff, right? So they're like, yeah, this is a real problem. So their solution to the problem was to tell people to not do that and also turn off all your two-factor auth. They don't want to have two-factor auth anymore, because the problem is when your account gets compromised, then the attacker turns on the two-factor auth, and then they have the two-factor auth. It's like, I think there's a little gap in understanding of what's happening here.
Yeah, so what happens is that the burglars break in, and they lock the deadbolt. So we got to, like, get rid of deadbolts.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's what happened. Oh. But then it turned out there's a little nuance in the thread, and it was that because it's the school district, I'm sure they've done this in Texas, they have in Oregon too, no more phones in classrooms.
Yeah, you know? we have.
And the phone is required for the two-factor auth. So under the guise of better security, they say, oh, yeah, turn off two-factor auth. What they're really doing is say these kids don't have their phones, so they can't two-factor auth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's maybe fair for kids, right?
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that, but just say it then instead of this little.
Here's what I want. Can I tell you what I want? Mm-hmm. This is my billion-dollar idea. I keep giving these away. As a parent of a child or whatever, or even for my kid, like, I don't want them to deal with passwords. I want them to have like a little credit card where they badge in to a website or a computer. NFC. Oh, hey, you need to, log in. Cool. Badge in. You know, I don't want them managing passwords. I want like a pass key through a physical device.
Because they're just going to do a bad job.
They're going to do a bad job. Passwords. And somebody's going to steal this pass. You know, I look through my son's email occasionally. I don't know if he knows I do that. But it's all password resets. He doesn't remember the password he sets. So he does the reset flow every time he has to log into something. So it's just that's his whole entire life is just doing password resets.
Oh, my God.
But like a badge in, or like as a parent, if my, instead of having like an Apple account, a YouTube account, a Google family account, a Microsoft family account, you know, like, what do you like? Oh, you want to buy whatever Lububu skin pack on Minecraft? Badge. That's my parental approval badge. You know, if they steal my badge, that's a security problem. That's a financial risk I'm willing to take. But like, it has to be dumb, right? It has to be so. I make big complicated passwords in 1Password, and then my son's like, "Hey, can you? I want to install this thing. Can you put your password in?" And I'm like, "I don't." Okay, this is a half hour of my life. This is, you know, like.
Doesn't passkeys assist in any of this, or not really?
Passkeys kind of, but I also don't want my son. Oh, like, well, sorry. There's like the shared operating system passwords, right? Or like family password sharing. Mm-hmm. That I don't want, because I don't want him using my bank password just to whatever, check how much money my
dad has. I set a bunch of like iPad controls on our little iPad, and they work. It's just that eventually there's an override, and I can fix this problem easily. But at the moment, she's grown up knowing what my general 4-digit code is that I use for stuff.
So she
just punches that in and gets right through the, you know.
Yeah.
I can play Barbie Dreamhouse now, even though it's after 8 p.m.
When my daughter unlocked my iPad, my personal iPad, without me asking, I was like, excuse me? And she was like, oh, yeah, I know your code. And I was like,
there you
brick.
That's a little, I'm going to have to change that.
Brick. Yeah.
I don't want to change it, you know.
Like, I want simple, man. Give me simple. Yeah. I just RFID, boop, boop, beep.
Believe me, the stuff in my life that needs to be very secure after my, you know, my long ago brush on this podcast with the guy who stole my domain name.
Was it Turd Ferguson, what was his name?
Turd Ferguson.
Chad Buster. Chud Buster. What is his name? Oh.
Yeah, remember when he wrote in like years later and being like, hey, you know, sorry about all that trouble I caused you and all that stuff.
I'm sorry.
And then we were like, so are you, you know, did you like reform yourself?
Yeah.
He's like, no.
No. Still stealing Bitcoins.
But I am sorry. It just shows you how complicated life is, you know. I like that feature Watchtower in 1Password. It's their little like, do you reuse anything? Do you, is there 2FA on some website that you're not using? And stuff knows all kinds of crap. It's nice.
Yeah.
Good.
I feel like there needs to be a holiday to go delete accounts or like delete old passwords. And
Yeah. I like half enjoy it sometimes when I'm like not in the mood to do like thinky work, because there are different brain modes. Like sometimes I want to write. I have a lot of writing in my career, as it were, and I like that. And one reason I like it is because I can do it. I can do it like at the pool during, you know, her swim practice.
Yeah.
I can do it at a coffee shop to change. I can do it anywhere, on the couch, on my main computer, whatever.
Pretty portable. Yeah.
Right. Coding is easy, best done on the big monitor sitting where I'm sitting right now, you know, just with the big screen and the bright and the stuff. But then there's some tasks where I'm like, I don't have any brain power at all, but I can change passwords.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know,
it's a good sit down TV task kind of sort of thing.
Yeah. Right. And sometimes these days I look at the TV and I like go to Netflix. And I'm like, oh, there's like a new Quantum Leap or something. Maybe I'll click that. And then I just can't pay attention to it. It comes and goes in waves. Sometimes I'm like watching movies and really enjoying that. At the moment, I cannot watch anything.
I'm the same. I don't know what my deal is. My bandwidth for TV, even shows I like or would in theory love, it's like, I don't know. I want to get rid of everything. But then my kids, love the kids. They like, they each watch enough on different services. I want to like scale down services, but you know, sometimes they're in a Bluey mood. That's Disney Plus. Sometimes they're in a, you know.
I can't even remember them all these like, days, because it's like now you have to have Peacock and Paramount and stuff. And that's like stuff I'm not used to that. I thought it was just like HBO, Netflix, and then you really, really, really reluctantly have Hulu. That's my very least favorite one because it's expensive and commercial laden and ugh.
Yeah. Well, in your head, how much does this cost? $10, right? Actual cost $25 to $30
$80 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not so good. Yeah, exactly. The translation sucks. Anyway. Oh, you know, there's one thing I wanted to talk about that we didn't get a chance to last time was the news about Google or whatever, because mostly as follow up, because we talked about it on this show as being like a potentially very huge moment in our industry. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't pay attention to that, well, you win, because it's a do nothing in the end. And that's what I was hoping for. I probably on the record saying that is that this doesn't have this doesn't have a ton of merit to me. Like Google can and should get wrist slapped by the government in all sorts of ways, but the danger was that this, like, whatever it is, antitrust, privacy issue that isn't in court now, had the threat of and had the Justice Department asking for Google to sell Chrome, being forced to sell it. And there was, you know, OpenAI wanted it and didn't Perplexity offer it. And, you know, there's people trying to get their hands on Chrome, and not just me, but me saying that's stupid and not good for the web in all sorts of ways. It for one thing, it's like a side issue to the actual problem too. The problem had some monopoly issues with search. So then fix the monopoly issue with search, you know, don't be like, I'm going to attack you in some side way, kidney punch you instead of solve the problem.
Yeah. I don't actually know the full result. Like what is changing, you know? Stock markets seem to think there was nothing that changed.
Everybody feels like they won. Google doesn't have to sell Chrome. Big win for Google. Google doesn't have to stop paying Apple. Apple doesn't have to stop getting paid. Great for both of them. Mozilla, just a easy street for Mozilla. Same old crap. Yeah. And Mozilla represents lots, I think, lots of smaller browsers that benefit in the same way that Mozilla does. I don't think Mozilla's the only like B-tier browser. Ooh, that feels weird to say, but they kind of are. Browser that gets a search deal with Google. Like, doesn't Vivaldi, wouldn't you think? Like, how do they roll? And
like small house.
Yeah, and Google's like, sure, make Google the default. Here's a check that it will employ a whole bunch of you. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is that doesn't need to go away, but they do. Here, I'll read some of this stuff. Then the Justice Department thinks they won too. So Google's like, sick, you know? Nice.
Little Jedi mind trick. Little,
yeah.
Man.
Well, here's the move along. It says Google will have to make certain search index and user interaction data available to certain competitors. So they have to like open up search a little bit even UX stuff. Google will also be required to offer certain competitors search and search text ad syndication services, which will open up the market by enabling rivals and potential rivals to deliver high quality search results and ads to compete with Google as they develop their own capacity. So I think how like Kaggy uses Bing, or isn't that the deal? Like, you know, ones that like are built on top of Bing, that maybe you'll be able to build on top of Google too. That's not going to happen overnight, because Google's going to, just because they are who they are and they have a bunch of lawyers, will appeal all of this, certainly. Anything against them, they will, which is a little unfortunate because it just drags it out forever. But oh well, pretty small. The big stuff doesn't change anything. We were crying. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but what I didn't like is if Google's got to get rid of Chrome and they can't stop paying, they can't pay for placements, which probably would have been a little more fair. The Google just doesn't have much incentive to invest in the web. They still have some, but they'd probably almost from being pissed be like, well, why would we employ this huge staff of people we are, whose all their job is to improve the web? It's very like ROI is pretty sketchy on these people, right? Like they will just be gone immediately, I think.
Yeah.
You think they're going to invest in web.dev after that? Hell no, they're not. Farewell. That's what I would think would happen. That is just pure speculation, but I'd be worried so much about that this period of this fruitful period of the web growth is not all Google, but dude, Google contributes a whole bunch to the web. And if that were to disappear, I think that would be really bad. I think browser innovation would slow down. I just think it would be like a less good period for the internet.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the forcing them to decouple Chrome didn't sit right with me, just from a... They build web products, so why do they, like, that's a huge part of their business, Google Apps, you know? Like, why would they have to divest of that thing? You know, that was sort of like divest of the engine that renders their products.
Let's say Ford was doing super well as a company, and then the government came in and said, like, you can't make engines anymore.
Yes, no engines.
Dude, we're an American company who invented this thing, and we put all the time and effort into making this thing. Why are you telling me I can't build the thing that we build?
So that sat poorly with me, I would say. Or I felt like it was not... It felt like over punishment, I guess would be how I describe it. You know, do I think something has to move on this privacy stuff? Yeah, we need legislation like to fix this. It's ridiculous. So I will tell a story. I was in the car with my son and I'm like showing him music, you know, and I'm like, oh, have you heard of Krangbin? You know, I don't know if you know them, but KH. Yeah.
Krangbin. Hell yeah. With like Texas Sun and stuff.
Texas Sun. I'm like, dude, let's check this song out. I get home that night. What's in my YouTube feed? Krangbin live show.
Like,
So Spotify talked to Google, that then, you know, talked to YouTube. And I just, that sucks. That's just gross. Like, I wasn't thinking about Krangbin before, only in this car ride, you know, like, so it's not this. Stop it. You're going to reply all me. You're going to be like, oh, they're not listening to you. They are. Reply all. You suck. You're not real journalists. And I think your network got canceled. Isn't
that the argument is that like your brain is just more tuned to be like looking for the word Krangbin because it's on your mind.
Well, it's in my algorithmic feed, man. I'm not looking for it. It's in there. They put it in there. I didn't like, oh man, I hope I'm going to just check if there's Krangbin. No, they like.
I know. I'm not trying to argue against you, but at the same time, it's like you don't notice every single thumbnail, right? Like,
oh, I do.
You see 2,000 thumbnails. I know every single one. That one.
Okay. Yeah. Guy with weird feet. Yep. Fixing the feet. Doing that one. Pimple popper. Got that one. Oh, man. Yeah.
Mine is embarrassing because I'll read a little, like I'll watch like a Lord of the Rings focused one. I was on a weird Lord of the Rings kick for a while. So my feed has a bunch of that stuff in it. And it's still like if you go off it for a while and then it's got Sudoku stuff because I like the cracking the cryptic boys. You see, they had a feature on The Verge recently.
Oh, they did? Nice.
Pretty neat. Yeah. They did a, like an hour long video with them talking about that community. Pretty fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's the algorithm is so dialed in, man. It's banjo stuff for me.
Maybe, but I wasn't anywhere in the Kring Bin world.
Oh no, universe, this happened to you. I happen to also agree with this. This was computers talking to each other about your choices.
So not everyone's happy about this Google thing. I want to call it DuckDuckGo says we do not believe the remedies ordered by the court will force changes necessary to adequately address Google's illegal behavior. So anyway, DuckDuckGo is not happy. And that's
Should I read more of the remedies?
Sure. Yeah.
Under the remedies order today, Google will be barred from entering or maintaining exclusive contracts relating to the distribution of Google Search, Chrome, Google Assistant, or the Gemini app. Google cannot enter or maintain agreements that, one, condition of licensing of any Google application, distribution, preloading, or placement of Google Search, Chrome, Google Assistant, or Gemini app. So you can't have an agreement that licenses it. Okay. Condition the receipt of revenue share payments from the placement of Google application. So that'd be like Mozilla can't pay Google revenue share for their placement in there, which I'm sure Google could care less about. The receipt of revenue share payments on maintaining Google Search. Blah, blah, blah. So it's the same kind of thing. Oh, shut up. There was a Google device in two rooms away.
And I heard you. See, yeah, it's listening.
It is listening. I really need to turn that off. Yeah, okay. So it's like if some company says, we'll put Google Search first and we'll give you some money, Google, but you have to give us money too. Prohibit any partner from simultaneously distributing any other GSE, meaning Google Search Engine, browser, or Gen AI, partner from simultaneously distributing it. I don't think Google wants that anyway. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but I read through these remedies and I'm like, these all help Google, don't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, what I liked is, so this is Judge Mehta, who was the judge in the Mehta cases too, which is so confusing, but it's M-E-H-T-A.
Oh.
Amit Mehta. And this is my favorite quote, which I just think is pertinent. Cutting off payments from Google almost certainly will impose substantial, in some cases, crippling downstream harms to distribution partners, related markets, and consumers, which counsels against a broad payment ban. If all of a sudden ain't no daddy Google money, the downstream harms are many.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could affect Apple's willingness to invest in the, you know, they stopped getting a $20 billion check. How's the team over at Apple doing?
Right. Well, and I think it, you know, is just ends up being this sort of, it's going to immediately become underinvested. And then, you know, what do we get next? You know? So I don't know. It's kind of like a huge, downstream harms is a great way to put it. You know, like there's a huge fallout. I'm glad you
listened to that because that's like, what I would have said. Like if he called me up and said, what do you think is going to happen to this? In two words, I'd say downstream harms.
Yeah. I mean, just say I'm on team more lawsuits in general, but I think, you know, that like situation is just purely I think that would be a apocalyptic event for us to like have a big shift like that, you know, and maybe people are rooting for that. And I don't know, but that felt like an apocalyptic kind of event. So,
okay. Is that all there is to say about the Google thing at the moment?
Yeah.
I think so. I don't know.
Perplexity tried to buy it.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah.
For like more than what they are worth. So,
what happens in that scenario?
Like, I don't know.
Jeepers, I can't imagine.
How much are users worth? That's sort of the question, right? So
yeah, it's pretty much that. And like, do you fully get it? You know, I remember, I think it was Alex Russell, while I was weighing in on this, was, you know, he does sometimes he uses his words a lot with the writing, and was like, you don't even understand how expensive and complicated just one little Google release is. You know, just the bandwidth cost alone to distributing an updated giant software product to the world is like, you think you got those bucks too? Not only the sale bucks perplexity, but every single time you hit new release, point release.
Yeah.
You're just blasting money out of your butt.
Yeah. No, I mean, you ever get in that situation where you like kind of like DDoS your CI server because like you have like 10 pull requests that are all hitting the CI server, and then they like you merge one merge and then all the CIs have to like re-update their pull requests, you know, and like you just kind of like end up in this like everything's going to take a long time to flush out this queue. I was talking to somebody over in the Edgeland, and they're just like, oh yeah, I think a lot of people set up all these things to merge in the middle of the night because like they're just like, they're like, or they'll stay up, you know, to like merge late because they know no one else is trying to merge stuff. And because it's just merging something into Chromium is such a big operation. So it's not like a one button, I'm done. You know, it's a big piece of software.
Indeed. So. I found another HTML attribute that I thought you would like, so I just wrote it down quick. It was it's the translate attribute. It just tells, it controls whether it's like okay for the browser to translate one particular element and its children in HTML.
Interesting.
So yeah, well, what I thought you'd like is the values, which is not, it's not the presence of the attribute or translate false, you know, like Booleans, because mm-hmm. it's actually a Boolean. It's you whether you want to translate it or not. But do we use true and false, Dave?
No.
We use no and yes.
Oh, good. What a fun value. So you say translate value.
No. I don't think it's do. It's just funny to me when we don't use Booleans for Booleans, you know?
Right.
Translate. No. I just like
that. Oh, that's so good.
It's funny to me.
That makes sense. I guess like you don't want to translate
your, I always remember back in my WooFu days there was one that always confused me, and I was as part of a, there'd be a piece of JavaScript that you copied to embed a form on a page. And then when you were doing that, you could pass in an object of options to the endpoint that put your thing there. And there'd be like a header that would be like the name of your form and mm-hmm. some description of the form and stuff. And some people like to turn that off because they were embedding it on like a WordPress website. And the title of the page was kind of like reservation for my wedding. And then it should just go into the form. It shouldn't say reservation for my wedding. Then have a header that said reservation wedding form. You're like, you don't need to see it twice. So mm-hmm. there's an option. And I always thought it would be like header. It was instead of show, I always thought it would be like show header false. Wouldn't that be like the API?
Yeah.
But instead it was header hide. You had to pass header the hide. String or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting, because it does read nicely. You're like header hide. You know, like I didn't hate it because it looks very specific. Like false doesn't have any implicit meaning. So now both of the two words both have meaning. Mm-hmm. Header has meaning and hide has meaning. Or is show header false is like show header has meaning, but false is like it doesn't have any meaning by itself.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, and, you know, some HTML attributes, it's like the presence of it means triggers it, right? Like I think like aria selected, you know, something like that. Like it's, you can set the value to true or false, but just the presence means it's selected, you know, like it registers. So you actually have to remove it to unselect it, you know? You know, I do wonder if like hide header is maybe a good one, but you could have also done header no.
Header, hide header no. And show header with then they have opposite Boolean values. Yeah, that's what's so tricky about or APIs. Like
one's the default and one's the override, right? Like hide. Right.
You'd pick the one that's the most common, which is not hiding the header. Oh yeah.
API. But you gotta like decide that, right? But yeah, you should probably have a mirrored API just in case, you know, somebody decides different or wants to show the header later or whatever, you know. So yeah, that's tough. You know, if you're a embedded widget though, you have a little flexibility. It's weird when it's somebody else has implemented your code. You don't really get to change the values and the attributes after you've shipped, you know? That's what we're experiencing. It's like, oh, we shipped it. Oh, that's not great. So we need to change that. And now how do we tell people to change that? So,
okay. You've got a good blog post, many years on the job, and I still don't get it. Was that just a venting thing? I felt it was worth mentioning. I kind of liked it. Just a reminder, just how much work isn't coding in coding jobs.
Yeah. I think it was just the other day. I was just sitting around. I was like, you know, there'll be days I get to like the end of the day and it's like, I've been sitting at this computer all day and I have no like commits or PRs, new PRs or whatever, you know, but like, I think I just, you know, was feeling unproductive or whatever. But then I was like, you know, like I'm looking at my to-do list. I have all this stuff, you know, like my to-do list is full every day and I'm knocking it out. But it's like not always code, right? Like, so I think you have to, I'm going to make it personal, not put it on other people. I have to accept the fact that a lot of the job, more of the job than I am probably comfortable with is like these sort of glue work things, like, you know, clearing out issues, checking my email, making sure that's done, replying to people, making sure I did a security bump update on some program or, you know, like that's all part of the job, you know? And I think like it's, you can like look at like lines of code or number of PRs or hours in chair and be like, oh, what, you know, I didn't do enough or, you know, but like sometimes you did, or often I think you did the job. You just, it does not manifest itself in code. That's how I feel, you know, some days, you know, just didn't.
I think that is universally true. And then also has a dial. Mm-hmm. Like if you're doing so much of this that you have pretty little time to code, then there's some kind of like job, there's something's got to change, but like, you'll never need to like not help your teammates understand what you're doing and not look at issues and not check your email. Those are things that like every job is going to have to do. But if you're so backlogged with non-coding tasks that you have like 2 hours a week to do that, there's just like something wrong too. And the dial needs to turn. Somebody else needs to help or something.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it is. Yeah. It's a balance, right? Like what was I hired to do versus what am I doing, you know? But, you know, I think there it's process, you know, like reading somebody's PR and evaluating that's, you know, not code. It doesn't show up as code, but it's helpful, you know, like gets things through, or being a sounding board for ideas. That's also helpful.
Oh, that's just straight up useful. You know, like if you have this like technical idea and even if you think it's pretty strong, and then you have some meeting or something and y'all just sitting around talking about it, and somebody, this happens to me all the time. Mm-hmm. They have some like a better idea, another take on it. And you're like, oh, I almost like jokingly scoff at him, like, oh, that's better. Damn it.
I hate it, it's better,
but it is, you know?
Yeah.
I don't actually hate it, is the idea.
No, I mean, honestly, the willingness to offer a bad solution that kind of works is as valuable as somebody who's like offering the perfect solution or something, you know, like, or it's easy to think my solution is the perfect solution. And then you go off and spend hours and hours and hours coding it. And then in PR, I think you said this the other day, you know, it's like, in PR, somebody's like, hey, did you think about doing this? And you're like, ugh, I could have saved 5 days, you know, if I'd just done this, you know, like,
yeah.
So I think it's worth even talking through an idea before you go off and do it, you know? So
totally. Maybe even sleeping on it, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes when we punt and we're like, I don't know, I don't like any of these solutions really. Like, it can be against the idea of like being quick, because I do think, I don't know, I struggle mostly with slowness. That's like, is an actual problem for me and my company is slowness. And so that needs to be thought of too, you know? if you can just go infinitely slow, all your decisions will be amazing.
Yeah, that's the twist. Like, if you know, time is money, money's luxury, you know, like there's even like this like element of like, oh, it's not urgent and you can just sit on, like, then is it important? Like, you get into that Eisenhower matrix, like urgent and important, you know, like if it's not urgent, why are we doing it? You know, like that's, you know, but I think like it has to be important, I guess, and not urgent. It can't be unimportant and unurgent. That's a bad zone.
Yeah.
So
the world is so hard. Well, dude, do you want to do some nerd stuff? I've been looking at a couple of CSS things recently that,
okay,
you know, have been out for a minute. One is at function. Seen that one?
Mm-hmm.
And if as well. So they're different, but they do have some relation to each other. And as I started going into it and looking at it, I'm not going to have like deep insight here, but I think people might be nice to know what it is. And then we'll do a little, although I'm going to have you vote on something and see what you think here. So at function is cool. There's so many functions in CSS already. Those are just like in JavaScript, a word with a parentheses, you know, and you pass arguments to it. You don't have to, it can be zero arguments, but usually the point is passing in an argument of some kind. But you know, I think there's like 100 of them or something. There's kind of a lot, but at function makes you can make your own, and then you get custom idents, right? Just how we always like that. Like if you're making up a word, it should be a custom ident practically. I think that's nice. The arguments that you pass in are custom idents as well. And then somewhere in the function, you have to, otherwise it won't do anything, have the result property, and the result is what gets returned out of that function. There can be multiple results in a function. And then the lowest down one, weirdly, not that weird, but like the source order lowest one wins. Even if it's a media query or whatever, I think you can kind of see that. And this one here is a result. I kind of like this one. We'll focus on this for a second. The function is called dash dash column logic. And the result is, well, I want 1FR, 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 three repeated 1FR columns. But then there's a media query within the function that says, like, just a straight up normal looking media query is the width less than 500 pixels. Well, then the result of this custom function is just 1FR, one column. So you could call that, you could say grid template columns, and then the way that you call a function is dash dash the custom ident you wrote, and then just put the parentheses, and then that is enough to know
dash it. Dash function name parentheses
dash dash, and then the parentheses is what makes it, you know, be called. Just like in JavaScript. But you can see how I'm abstracting away the logic of what's happening with my columns up here in this function, instead of doing it down here in this kind of more like declarative area, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's why I have some of this commented out code, is that this is what it might have looked like in the past, is that we write it like this and then we mix the logic right into here. Which is,
yeah, you'd have like your grid template columns, and then you'd have a media query inside of there. You could nest the media query, but in older CSS, you'd have to, you know, put it back at the root and then redeclare the grid.
Yeah. Like
you'd like,
so that's what I want to show you, actually, Dave. So let me jump into that. I put this little document together because I'm like, God, there's so many ways now to do this. So again, let's, everybody close your eyes.
Mouth coding.
Imagine a grid with three columns, except for when the browser window is less than 500 pixels, then it's one column. Three columns, one column. Three columns, one column. Okay. Number one, the way we used to write that is like this. A grid class is display grid, and then we said grid template columns, 1FR, 1FR, 1FR. Then before CSS nesting existed, we'd have to write the media query, then repeat the grid selector inside of that, and then put grid template columns 1FR. So it's these lines of code. And honestly, it's not really that bad when you look at it that simply.
Nine
lines. But you're repeating a couple of things, Dave. You're repeating the selector. And you're repeating the property that you need to repeat.
Right,
so it's like, I don't know. Like if you were going to argue against this code perhaps those are the two things that you would poke at. CSS nesting gets rid of one of them immediately. You can put them a little closer together in the code, which I always think matters. So now you have the grid selector, which you only ever write once. Mm-hmm. And you write grid template columns inside the grid selector. And then nested within that grid selector is the media query. Mm-hmm. Then you don't have to repeat .grid because it's just implied. Anything that's inside here applies to the grid. And then you say grid template columns 1FR. So I would argue that 2 is just almost just straight up better than 1.
Yeah.
Except for that you might be repeating this media query a lot of times in your code more than you would here. Because if I had other stuff going on, like some footer changes or whatever, now there's only one media query that's doing all of this work, rather than the nesting style.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's maybe better. Like you have like co-located logic or whatever, right? You don't have a thousand media queries. You have one media query.
Instead of having to repeat this. So it's depending on which thing are you repeating more, which thing is more problematic.
But I think number two is pretty like, you know, that's, or I think
really agreed upon as better.
I think your number three here is kind of what we do though internally is
do you at Microsoft? So now there's a custom property called calls, just meaning, you know, the value for grid template column, --calls, 1FR, 1F1F, 1FR. Now we set grid template columns to that variable. Mm-hmm. Then at the nested media query breakpoint, we reset the custom property of calls, --calls to 1FR. That's interesting. And now we're not repeating the CSS property grid template columns. Or we don't need to do that. It's like one less problem.
Yeah. And like, you know, I think what's neat about this pattern is you're defining calls inside grid there, but it could be defined on the body, you know, and shared across many things. And then you have like...
Exactly. You're right.
You know, so there's... I think like, you know, or like a token system, like what if that's --color brand or whatever, right? And it could be like, you know, anyway, I think that's sort of like a
cool pattern. That would be the advantage, right? Your variables like this, you'd probably declare a little higher up than you immediately need. Because it improves the shareability.
But you could also then override that variable and you're saying, no, at this situation, make it this, right? So that seems,
Cool. So then number four is the function stuff that we just looked at, is that now instead of just a custom property called calls, I'm going to make calls actually a function. And the function has the logic baked into it. So now I have the result of the function calls is 1FR, 1FR, 1FR. But there's a media query inside the function where the result changes to 1FR. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what I was talking about source order, Dave. If I put this here, the media query would never do anything because the result is lower now.
I guess that's like JavaScript. It's like last wins, right? Like,
It's source order matters here. But source order is a different concept than like execution order, because I could like do weird stuff, like declare a variable down here and it doesn't matter. It's not going to like not have the variable, even if I use it up here. It's like that type of thing does not matter in CSS. There's no like execution order.
Right. It does add this weird, but if you wrote that in code, if it was result or whatever, background red, and then you had the media query,
Here's an example of it, Dave. This was confusing to me at first, is I have this function column logic. And if I uncomment this out, I put a supports query in the function as well. That works. Now, because every browser, I put color:red in the supports query.
Yeah.
This will never be the result. This will never be the result. This one will only always be the result.
Because every browser supports red. Because
it's the lowest one down and it is supported.
That's a funky edge you got to know. That's good. I like to know that.
It's funky, but I kind of don't hate it somehow.
Yeah.
So that's number four, is when you abstract the logic into a custom function instead and you use that.
How do you feel about this? Because I like this from a... I am pulling logic out of my template or out of my component, right?
That's it, Dave. Like it makes this piece of code, you know, we think of CSS and we say, that's a declarative language. And it is. This is declarative. This is declarative. But to me, like, this is declarative, like, it's a just a declared function or something. But this is, like, more declarative.
Mm-hmm.
This becomes, like, the part of the code I look at when I want to, like, visualize what's going on. I want to, like, see what's all applying to the grid. And the fact that I don't have to look at a bunch of logic in here feels nice. It feels like this is the more declarative
part. My grid template columns is whatever dash dash calls parentheses decides. Like, and so then, you know, now my logic's over here. I mean, it creates more work for me when I'm debugging. I have to, like, go now fish through another lake, you know, but yeah. I think that's cool.
And the more you do it, the cooler it gets, I think. Like, abstracting logic away is just, it can be nice. I'm not, none of these are wrong, but I don't know. Is that an improvement? Maybe. And the thing that's maybe a little not fair about this is we're using a function that doesn't take any parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And the more parameters you use, the more logic is likely to be happening in the function, and, like, probably the more valuable that abstraction is.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you can't even do this, Dave. You can't even go, oh, I'll take the breakpoint then, and I'll use it here, var dash dash breakpoint, because media queries don't take custom properties. That is just not a thing that works.
Right? Is there at custom media thing?
Yeah, it's going to be at custom media. Eventually, there's going to be a thing called at custom media. And I don't know why we don't have it yet, but we don't. It just seems to come up an awful lot. So let's have it.
It's funny how, like, we get all this cool CSS, and then what do I need? I need this thing that doesn't exist.
The one more thing is not there. Like, yeah.
I'm probably the worst, but I could really use custom media. I never needed it really ever, but now I kind of, like, super do. So, So wait, you got number five.
So there's one more.
Yeah,
one more.
What's happening?
So you'll notice in number four that there's two results. And remember, we talked about the lowest one down wins. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just a little funky or whatever. What the if function then can do in CSS, this is the first time I mentioned if, is that it kind of smashes together the value all in one. So now we only have one result function, but it's functionally the same. And the if, like, the structure of if is like this, Dave. If parentheses, and you go condition, colon, value, semicolon. Condition, value, semicolon. Condition, value, semicolon. Else, value, if you want to. The else is a keyword. And in these conditions are like media, or they are supports, there's a third one. What is it? I can't remember what it is right now. It's so obvious, and the only reason I can't container. Is because I'm doing it live. No, it's not container, sadly. It's something really obvious that you'll be like, duh. Anyway, so that's kind of what's going on with the if function, and we're just using media here. So here's the condition. The media is less than 500 pixels, so you get 1 FR. Otherwise, you get all the rest. Very kind of, like, does that read better?
It's a little bit like a switch statement, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
should be switch, maybe, because of all the different, you never have to write.
I think that reads better. I can't decide, yeah. I think if you had multi conditions, like,
to me.
Like, let's say you had like 10 different breakpoints at the top.
If you had that,
like, now that's easier. If you were to do it in the number four example, you know, like,
right.
So, because if you had
what
10
I did there for the people listening on audio is I made like 8 conditions and they're all stacked on top of each other, and it really does actually. I think I agree with Dave. That looks nice. You know,
that would be a, you know, and you're getting into like. We've been dealing with these card layouts, you know, and it's like if you have like height and width that you're trying to do, like that would be probably better to understand, like, you know, just, I don't know, longer is more complex, you know, but
yeah,
because if you like go up to number four and like copy that media at media query and put like 10 of those.
Oh, right. Like, how's that looking now? Less good.
Get me out of there. Yeah. I don't want to do that. So I think I like if in that other situation.
But. Yeah, you're right. The more complicated this stuff gets, the syntax becomes more,
the more useful more clear. If becomes, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Because I bet you can do like this. You know, like the white space is fine.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. Yeah, that kind of looks nice. That makes it extra switchy to me.
See? I'm telling you.
Turns out it was a switch coach. All along.
Put yeah. what hired idiot. What do we resident whatever idiot. Expert idiot. That's what I want.
Pretty neat though. This is spec'd out and it should just eventually come to other browsers. Is it shipped? Is very much Chrome only. Yeah.
It's Chrome only right now.
I think at Function is the newer one, which was Chrome 139. I see. I'm showing my dirty laundry. I'm back on Arc, but I was convinced that I think this guy that spent $610 million on it is going to want Arc cruising along. And but then I was immediately bummed out because Chrome was on 138 and Functions were on 139. And I'm like, oh God, I'm already regretting switching back to Arc whenever I had to use Chrome Canary for a minute. But then I think or if is older and is like one Chrome 136 or something like that. So these are, they're in stable Chrome now, which is something, you know.
I was going to see, it doesn't look
which
like
means
it's
Edge in... 2 and all that. I've somehow have like drawn the line where like when I talk about this stuff, I don't say Blink and I don't say Chrome and friends, or I just say like it's in Chrome and you're just going to have to extrapolate that yourself.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
All right. Well, what's your vote? You got a vote? You're going to go with 5?
I think I'm a 5. I think, you know, 4 is probably my day-to-day. 5 is maybe my where I'd like to get to. Because I assume, are they coming out at the same time? Is that kind of the thing? They're bundled?
Well, no, it'll be two releases staggered. But, what you know, it'll be this year.
What is the fallback? Like, or can Lightning CSS bail me out? Do you know those?
Good question. What is the fallback? Is there a... There was one that had an interesting...
I mean, I guess you could always fallback. Just be like grid template columns 1FR as the fallback, right? Like you could... Or like that's the default. And then you do grid template columns --- calls. So
I haven't thought deeply about this, but it might be in the category just for me personally, where I just don't bother if it's not.
Oh yeah. Display grid with a fake grid template columns is going to be one. Like it's a one column grid.
If this fails, what you get is grid template columns 1FR essentially.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, that's,
I think like, I like it. Yeah.
It's actually pretty good, actually. In this exact case, it's pretty good.
In this case, it works. I think in other cases, like color swapping and stuff like that, maybe it works less. But is it how bad? You know, like one thing I'm thinking about is like layers, you know, like I put a card on a background and then somebody puts a card inside a card, you know, like these layers, you know, and you want to like darken over time. I think I've talked about it here before, but like, you know, is there a way to do that, you know, with these if statements and stuff like that, or these sort of app functions? I think it'd be kind of cool to see, you know, experiment with that. So,
yeah, there's, I don't know, this gets more complicated, but this is an example from Bramis. You know, there's a light dark function built in, not --, but just light dark.
Yeah.
And it returns the light version in light mode and dark version, dark mode, but they have to be colors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a function then that respecting the media query can be anything, can be a digit or a, you know. Anything. I think that's kind of neat, you know, like this changes the font weight a little bit in dark mode and not in light mode or whatever, or in light, you know, you get it.
Yeah.
Just kind of an interesting idea.
We're looking at some like internationalization stuff with our tokens, you know, and I think the whole, there's like, we're going to build a whole new theme and like, that's cool. But what if you just say at, you know, if Lang China, then, you know, or Chinese, like then do a few swaps, you know, update a few tokens to match what they need, you know, like don't do a whole thing. Like we can all use the same file that's intelligent. An intelligent CSS That's my Abooka part.
That's about intelligent CSS. Oh my gosh. This is the time to write this with all
Jeffrey,
this new stuff.
I know you're listening. Bring it back, bud. Bring it back.
Fire up the warm up, grease up them presses.
Get the presses going. Intelligent CSS. That's where we're at. So yeah, it's cool. I don't know. It's a cool era.
It sure is.
I've been messing with Light Dark too, and Light Dark's fun.
Oh my God. I like it more than I should almost. I just keep coming up with, if you, for example, if you put color scheme Light Dark in you're using it, you've really, you're now you're like committed. Like you kind of have to start using it in a way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And you really want that line. Cause then you get like the dark form styles and the dark scroll bar and the dark check boxes and all that stuff. When you're in dark mode, like it's a really easy opt in, but as soon as it's there, now every time you write the word background color or color, you got to think about it, and it, a way to like chill that out and feel less like, oh, about it is, well, there's Light Dark. So just put two colors. It's fine.
Yeah. Or variables, background color, right. You know, or what, background primary. And then it's like that has the Light Dark in it. You didn't have to think about it again. You know, like,
yeah, you just used the property, the custom property. That's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm going to give a shout out. Website of the week, uh-huh. Matthias Ott. If you've not seen his new website is,
Oh, did he redesign? I haven't seen it yet.
Well, it's very similar, sort of. But then Ooh. You go click the little levels button in the mm-hmm. top yeah. and just have a fun spin on all the little knobs he's giving
Holy
you.
Holy so, wow. Are these yeah. SVG filters? They must be.
Yeah, he really messed up his website. It's great. It's like computer crashing levels of fun. So, yeah.
Tremendous. How fun are these? Wow. Grit. Okay, well, I'm going to have fun with that. That's fun. Rules.
Yeah. So, anyways, speaking of like variables and just like, you know, how far you can take it, that's a really good example. So, yeah. Well, cool. All right. We'll just wrap it up because we're over time and I probably have a meeting. So I'm like 10 minutes late too. So thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcast church. Be sure to shard it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us over on the Mastodon, the Blue Sky. Do one of those good ones. And then join us in the Discord, patreon.com/shard+show. Chris, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Nope. Gotta go. Have fun. See you later. Everything's awesome. Bye.